number
12673, real one.
Mr. Hill, real one. Whereabouts were you born, please?
In Southampton, 1932.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father was a transport driver for the Southern Daily Echo.
Did you go to school in Southampton?
I was born and bred and raised in Southampton, yeah.
Which school did you go to?
Bassett Green Infant School to start with, Bassett Green Junior School, and Mayfield Park School. That was a seniors. I mean, it's different now what they call them, but that's what there was in my day.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that was in 46?
1946, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you in Southampton throughout the war?
I was in Southampton throughout the Second World War.
Can you tell me what the Blitz was like in Southampton from your own personal experience of it?
Well, the first personal experience that I've got of actual warfare in regards to Blitz was that we were in the bottom part of the Southampton with my mother when the air raid sirens blew, and we had to dive for cover underneath a church, what they call the All Saints Church, and there was a terrific raid going on above. And I remember we were in this air raid shelter for about 3 or 4 hours until we got the all clear to come out. There was a cosmopolitan lot of people, shoppers mostly, in there. And I always remember vividly when we came out, the high street was running with melted margarine and butter because they'd hit the cold storage. And I remember my mother and most of the women, because it was wartime, they were just grabbing handfuls of this butter and trying to ram it into whatever they could so we could have butter or margarine. But on November, that's when Southampton really got a nighttime blitz.
When do you think that incident was with the margarine?
Well, this must have been 1940, or the latter part of 1940. This was a daylight raid. I can't exactly remember the exact month, but it was just prior to the big blitz that the Luftwaffe attacked Southampton. So I should remember it was about September of that year.
What was the name of the street where the
High Street, the High Street.
Now, you're just about to tell me what happened in November 1940.
Well, in November, that's when the real blitz came. That's when the Southampton was devastated. And we lived about 4 miles, a place called Bassett. And, of course, naturally, they all put us in the air raid shelter. My father, this is prior to him going to India and Burma, because he was called up in the RAF. And the Messerschmitts and the Dornier bombers seemed to come right over the estate that I lived on and turn round and then dive bomb Southampton. And all we could see was the town sort of ablaze. You could just see the glow. You know, we knew that Southampton was really getting hammered. And then there was another incident that I remember vividly. This was just before my father got called up. There was no air raid siren blown that night, but you could tell the different sound of the airplane's engines. You knew a Dornier had a sort of a gnawing, groaning sort of a effect. And I remember my father rushed in and threw my mother and me underneath the kitchen table, and we heard an almighty explosion. And what it was a landmine on a parachute landed in the next road and killed several families there. And I remember my father and all the neighbours went up to try to assist in getting, you know, what they could. But I was too young, obviously, to go.
Which road would that have been?
That was in Bluebar Road. Bluebar Road. I lived in a road called Lilac Road, and this was Bluebar Road. And you always tell to this day where the bomb, the landmine landed, because you've got a road full of 1930 style houses, and then you've got in between, you've got about three houses that are more or less mod com where they rebuilt it. Another incident, if you're talking about Blitz, that we visited my auntie, my mother's sister, a place called Cox Ford, of a Sunday evening.
Where's Coxford?
Cox Ford is west of Southampton. It's an estate about 3 or 4 miles the other side of Southampton. It was always a ritual of a Sunday that my mother and myself and my father used to go over and visit my auntie, and we always used to catch the last bus back to where I lived in Bassett. And we no sooner got home, and their air raid sirens sounded, and there we could hear bombs dropping. We were in the air raid shelter. And about 2:30, 3:30 in the morning, my cousin arrived at our house on his push bike. Said to my father, "Could you possibly come over to Mum's house? We've had a direct hit." And my father got me. We're talking about push bikes. There was no cars or motor cars in them days, not for the likes of us. So he got on his bike with my cousin. And anyway, in the morning, my mother was a bit panicky because she wanted to know about her sister. So we caught the bus over. And there was nothing left of my auntie's house. So she got a direct hit. But fortunately, the whole of her family was in the air raid shelter. My grandmother, she got blitzed down the bottom part of Southampton. She was bombed out. I'm trying to think of where would that be, Mary? That would be near Godwin's, wouldn't it? That would near the Central Hall, Southampton.
What kind of state were they in once they were bombed out?
What, I mean, the people?
People like your aunt.
Well, my auntie, she had five children. Well, they were grown up then, because then she had no youngsters then, because three of them was already in the armed services. I can more or less say that the blasting of my grandmother's house virtually brought her early death. I can say that my auntie, being a few obviously younger, was rehoused soon afterwards in another area of Southampton. That's what they did. You know, if you got bombed, they did everything they could to find you other accommodations. But my grandmother, who obviously was getting on in years, she virtually never got over the shock of seeing her house destroyed. And my mother to this day always says that it more or less brought her, you know, early death on. She was broken hearted. Whether it was true or not, I don't know. I mean, I was sort of too young to realise that then.
How frightened were you of the bombing?
Well, surprisingly enough, you see, with us in our age group, it was an experience. We virtually didn't know anything else. I mean, you take it, we were born in 1932. We only had a few years in our adolescence before there was a world war. And I think my wife would agree. I mean, to us, it wasn't, a terrible time, because we didn't know any other time. I mean, it was only when the peace was there that we realised. Well, I mean, ice cream. We never knew what an ice cream was. And we were rationed. You couldn't have none of the luxuries that you could get today. And I think this is the one thing that you find most people in my age group still smoke, because maybe it was a way that you sort of calmed your nerves down or anything like that.
But when the bombs were falling, were you frightened as a child?
Yeah, towards the end, when you realise what a bomb could do, there was one other experience that some friends of mine, we were cycling across the common, and we still believe to this day that we were machine gunned when a low flying, I forget the name of the German aircraft now, started to strafe Southampton. That was frightening.
How close did the bullets come?
Well, we could see them. We could see them sort of hitting the verge of the road as we were, and we took cover, obviously. But when we go later on, if you want, I mean, I'll tell you when I was frightened. Obviously, when I was in Korea.
Well, we'll come to that later.
But to us youngsters of our age group, it was an experience. Well, I don't think we realised. The only time I realised is when my father was actually called up. And I never saw my father for the best part of 4 years. I didn't virtually recognise him. I mean, he was sent to India. And he served in the... He's dead and gone now. But he's a member of the Burma Star Association. And that's when I think I realised, when I was just left with my mother, and he used to see the letters come, and they were all censored. He couldn't say exactly where he was and all that, and my mother's got those letters now.
Where was that strafing incident that you mentioned?
On the common in Southampton, the common, what they call the common.
What did you and other people in Southampton at the time think of the enemy? Did you hate the Germans who were bombing the city?
Well, put it this way, I don't know where this should be go recorded. I don't like the German race at all. Because as you look up there, you'll see that my young uncle, 19 years old, was killed at the Battle of the Somme. And I suppose I've always sort of had it in me, because my father told me about him, that I've had a hatred for the Germans. And I'm afraid I still have. I mean, I don't think really, we're say, any man who fought the Germans, or in my age group, could honestly say that they're in love with the Germans. I mean, they've got a different generation now, obviously, but to me, once a German, always a German. I mean, I just don't know. I've got no feeling for the German race, because they've caused so much aggression in the world. I mean, what the atrocities that they committed. And then, it was inborn. I mean, when we were at school, we were told Nazis. No good. You were more or less inoculated that the Germans were your enemy, and that was it.
Can I ask you about the public shelters which existed in Southampton during the Blitz? What were they like? What were conditions in them like?
Well, as I say, the only public shelter that I went in was that one I explained underneath the church, All Saints Church, who incidentally got devastated when the main Blitz came. But we always had the old Anderson air raid shelter in the garden. But I think my wife experienced more in the public, because where she lived right in the bottom of the town. But
what was your Anderson shelter like?
Well, it was like everything else. The men of the family, they did it up as best they could, because virtually we had to sleep in them. I mean, it was no good going into bed, because as soon as you got into bed, the air raid sirens used to go. So what we'd all decided, the people in the road, we'd all make as most comfortable we could, and we used to virtually sleep in the air raid shelter all night, because at least you were already there and you were safe, or comparatively safe.
By the end of the bombing, did Southampton look a terrible mess?
Oh yes, there was hardly anything standing at all in the bottom part of Southampton.
Near the dock.
Near the dock. Well, not only that, actually, they didn't do a lot of damage to the docks. There was virtually very little damage to the docks. It was more or less the residential areas and the shopping areas of Southampton that got the main bout of the German Luftwaffe. I mean, it was, as they call it now, carpet bombing. They just blitzed any. They came over. I don't think there was any specific target. They used to come over. We're over Southampton. Bomb doors open, and away went the bombs.
How do you think public morale in the city held up under the bombing? Was there any tendency for it to crack?
Oh, yes, I suppose there must have been, especially for elderly people. Their life, every night, I mean, they knew damn well that the sirens would go, and they didn't know whether they were going to have a home to come back out to in the morning. A lot of people used to get what they could and used to go more or less out of Southampton early part of the evening, place called the Clump. These are local places that was more or less out of Southampton, and then return in the morning. We never did that. We stayed where we were. But yeah, I should imagine the morale was gradually on the wane as the war went on.
Did any people ever say that we ought to give in or come to an agreement with the Germans?
No, sir, not to my knowledge. No, there was never, I never, ever, or, in fact, I think that, not contradicting myself, I mean, you were all in the same boat sort of thing. Nobody had anything more than anybody else, and I think the morale, more or less individually, was hatred for the Germans for doing it. And every time we heard that we scored a victory over the Germans, well, it was a great occasion.
Were you, as a youngster in Southampton, expected to do anything for the war effort?
No, I think I was a little bit too young. We had to listen, obviously, to the propaganda that the government of the day was dishing out. You know, we were very conscious not to talk to strangers in case they were German. We thought every stranger was a German spy. I remember that. If you saw a stranger, you think, oh, he looks like a German spy, and so you didn't talk about anything. You more or less kept out of his way. I can't recall any sort of incident other than what I've just said in regard to that.
So you weren't used as a fire watcher or a runner or anything like that?
No, as I say, we were only children. The only thing that I do know that I missed about 2 years schooling because the school that I mentioned earlier on was taken over by the army, and all I went for 2 years was the school for 1 hour a day. And that was in alphabetical order, so that when the time you got to the school, which was a mile away from where you lived, and they called your name, that hour was over, and the next batch used to go in. So virtually, we didn't have no schooling at all for 2 years.
Did you collect bits of shrapnel?
Oh, yes. I collected some shrapnel. I mean, there was shrapnel laying all over the place in... I haven't got it to today, but I've got two great big lumps of shrapnel that went through the roof of my father's Echo van during the Blitz. He'd parked the van up when the bombs were coming down to take shelter, and when he come back, the roof of his van was smashed, and there was two great big lumps of bomb shrapnel, which my mother had for years, but as I say, I don't know where they went to now.
Now, can we come on to your national service, and
Yeah. Can
you tell me when and how you were called up and what you felt about it?
Yes, I can tell you that. I was called up at the age of 18 in August 1950. Much to my unhappiness, I suppose, because I thought, you know, I'd more or less... I had a job, which I virtually stayed 45 years until last January when I retired.
That was on the railway.
That was on the railway. As I'll say, when I was 17 and a half, you had to register. At 17 and three quarters, you had to go for your medical, which I passed. And then just after you were 18, you had to stand and wait for your call-up papers, which I duly received. And I had to report to Bulford Camp in Wiltshire, just outside Salisbury. Now, naturally, I was told that because I was a railwayman, I would automatically go into the railway operating department of the Royal Engineers, which I thought, well, this would be just right because I could carry on virtually in the trade I was in. But I found myself in an infantry training camp at Bulford. And then a few weeks after we were in the camp doing basic infantry training, that is more or less learning how to kill an enemy, we all had to go before the personnel selection officer. When it came to my turn, he said, I've seen that you've railwaymen, and you're just the men we're looking for. Would you like to go in the railway operating department of the Royal Engineers? I said, yes, please, sir. He said, right, you'll be hearing from us. Well, to this day, I'm still waiting to hear from him, because I was suddenly trained, put in the 1st Battalion of the Royal Hampshire Regiment, given 14 days embarkation leave, and went back to Bulford, and then sent to Minden in West Germany as a member of the British Army of the Rhine, as it was then.
What happened to you at Minden?
Well, at Minden, we were more or less occupational forces. We more or less showed the flag to the Germans and all that, you know, that we were the victorious Allied forces. But then within 10 weeks, I always remember this, there were 24 of us. Our names came up on the commanding officer's duty list. We had to report to the commanding officer of the battalion, and we thought, well, what have we done wrong? You know, what does he want to see us for? So we had to parade in our best uniform, and we were marched in. And he said, unfortunately, he said, you 24 are leaving the Hampshires. Now, actually, we were very happy because the Hampshire Regiment to us was, oh, it was a very, how can I describe it? When you had to press and square your bootlaces, and when you made your bed, you had to put cardboard in so that the blankets... we called it the bullshit brigade. I mean, if you can cut that out if you want to, but that's what we were getting out. Like, we were over the wall, over the window. Yeah. So, of course, one of us said, managed to say, well, sir, what regiment are we going into? He said, you're being transferred to the 1st Battalion of the Gloucestershire Regiment. Then another bright spark said, oh, that's just right. They're stationed out in the West Indies. And all I could see was Coral Seas, Montego Bay. I myself, I can spend 2 years out there just right. Unfortunately, we didn't know that they'd have left Jamaica, the West Indies, and been sent to Korea.
When was this?
This was in 1950. Yeah, the latter part of 1950. And then we were told then that we were going to Korea. Well, I can look you in the face and think, well, I never heard of Korea. I didn't even know where Korea was.
Didn't you know there was a war going on?
We knew. Well, you see what I'm saying? The Korean War had only started just after we were called up. I mean, it was a conflict. I mean, what we were thinking about then, there was a conflict in Africa with the Mama, there was a conflict in Malaya with the communists, but Korea was a word we hadn't heard of. And I remember everybody was looking for maps to find out where it was, and when we found out, you know, how far it was from where we were, you know, that's when the panic set, you know, we're going to Korea. And we were politely told that there was a war going on in there. And I remember we came back to England. We had all the inoculations you could. I mean, I got it in my army paybook, all the inoculations I had. I mean, it's a wonder our arm was still left on our. And we were given 14 days leave. And we had to report to a place called Tavistock, Plaster Barracks, Tavistock. That's near Plymouth, remember that. And we never had no training for that particular theatre of war. I mean, all we were trained for is more or less ceremonial duties in Germany. Parades and God knows what else.
How did you get to Korea?
Well, I'll tell you. We left Plaster Dame Barracks late in the afternoon, and we travelled by train. There was just 24 of us. One lieutenant, I remember his name, Lieutenant Llewellyn. I always, Second Lieutenant Llewellyn, always remember his name. And a Sergeant Budden. And 24 of us. Ordinary soldiers. And one of the reasons why we were picked to go to Korea, I should add to that, is because we were classed as specialists. I did do a course on an 88 radio set, and there were expert Bren gunners and all that in amongst the we were sort of selected at the 24, which wasn't a thing that we like, you know, we wish to God we wasn't selected, but still. Well, we came up to you probably know it, I've been there since, there was an underground embarkation camp at Gooch Street in London. It was an underground camp that anybody that was going abroad, the Far East, Middle East or whatever, they were flying out, they all congregated in there, and all you got there was your documents and all that in your kit bag for all that. And I remember spent 2 days pardon me there, and then we were told that we were going to Luton Airport. We naturally thought we were going to go to Korea by sea, which would have taken 6 weeks, and we were always hoping that during the 6 weeks the war would end and we wouldn't be involved in it, but no, they decided we were going to be flown out. And I remember we arrived on the apron of the runway, and you can imagine there's 24 soldiers, some of them come from Somerset, some of them come from Dorset, half of them had never seen an aeroplane, let alone flying. And the aeroplane that was to take us to on this momentous journey was an old York bomber converted. I know where you remember a York bomber. You think of a Lancaster bomber. Well, that's what it was like, but it was converted. In other words, they put a few seats